Sarah wouldn't need a ticket. That was one more bonus of being a cuckoo. She could waltz past security without showing ID, and the airline would mysteriously find her an unclaimed first-class seat. "No," said Sarah calmly. I blinked.
"No?
What do you mean, no?"
"I mean, no. The Covenant isn't going to find me. You need me, Verity. I'm the ultimate spy." Dominic was thinking it, even though he was trying not to, because he didn't want to upset you. "You need me to stay here and help. I'll do it, because if I let you get killed, your mother's going to be so mad."
Sarah looked at me calmly. "You can argue if you want, but I'll just change hotels and not tell you where I am."
"I hate you sometimes," I said.
"I know." I sighed. "But I also love you. I do appreciate this, Sarah."
Sarah smiled.
"I know that, too. Dominic and I are going back to the freak show. I need to tell the staff we're about to have issues and make sure everyone knows what to do when the Covenant comes to town."
"Okay."
"Okay," I echoed, and moved to hug her before heading toward the door. "Don't be a hero, Sarah." She laughed at that.
"I'm the last person in the world you need to worry about there. I'll call if I hear anything."
The convenient thing about having a telepath in the family. She never runs out of batteries, and she doesn't depend on the cell towers for service.
"Gotcha.
Good luck down there."
"Miss Celebi," said Dominic with a small nod.
Then he turned and followed me to the door, out to the hall, and into the elevator.
"That went surprisingly well," I said.
"Yes," he agreed blandly.
"Now let's go figure out what can go surprisingly poorly."
"Don't worry," I said, as the elevator doors closed. "I'm sure we can find something."
Chapter 6.
We aren't exiles from the Covenant of St. George. We're natives in our own country, and when that country is endangered, it's our duty to dig in our heels and fight. If we aren't willing to save ourselves, how can we expect anyone else to save us? Alice Healy. The Freak Show, a highly specialized nightclub somewhere in Manhattan.
"So this is what the street-level entrance looks like these days," I said, as Dominic and I approached the front door of the Freak Show.
It was painted to look like the mouth of a tent, with old-fashioned carnival posters painted to the wall all around the ticket booth. I recognized myself in the middle of a can-can lineup, one painted leg eternally cocked at a come-hither angle that I hoped never to have to explain to my father. Sometimes I think the dangers of my mundane career outweigh the dangers of the career that's more likely to get me actually killed. Vivisection hurts, but it can't hold a candle to paternal disapproval. Dominic followed my gaze to the poster in question, quirking an eyebrow before he said,
"Surely this can't be the first time you've approached from the ground."
"I hate taxis. Subways freak me right the hell out. I don't have a car, and no one who isn't a bike messenger, certifiable, or both tries to ride a bike in Manhattan." I shrugged. "I stick to the rooftops. It's worked out pretty well for me so far."
"You mean you haven't reduced yourself to a street pancake due to a misjudged leap?"
"That's what I said, isn't it? It's worked out pretty well so far." I flashed my ID at the girl in the ticket booth, another dragon I didn't recognize. She looked up from filing her nails only long enough to confirm that I didn't need to pay admission, and that, by extension, Dominic didn't either, before rolling her eyes in disgust and pointing me toward the door.
"One day you will have to tell me where you acquired this aversion to walking on solid ground," said Dominic.
"Try having a baby sister whose idea of a good time involves pit traps and landmines," I advised. The bouncer on duty opened the club door for us, and I smiled at him as we walked on through. "It's amazing how fast that sort of thing will make you think it's time for a return to the trees." The entry hall was decorated to match the door. Green canvas tent fabric draped with strings of Christmas lights and little triangular banners obscured the walls and ceiling, making it seem like we were heading into the big top. Even the floor was covered in a layer of sweet-scented sawdust, reinforcing the carnival theme.
I had to admire it as a cost-cutting measure. The cedar shavings were probably saving Kitty a fortune in air fresheners, and she could buy them from the abattoir who lived under Broadway, which would save her even more. If you need a corner cut, talk to a boogeyman. Ryan was on duty at the interior door, less to check the work of the first two gatekeepers, and more to make it clear to any drunk businessman looking for a little grab-ass that we were a respectable establishment that would kick your nuts into your nasal cavity if you so much as looked at one of the girls wrong. He blinked when he saw me come walking down the hall. He blinked again when he saw Dominic walking behind me.
"Verity," he said, an uncertain note in his voice. "You're on the ground. Are you okay?"
His eyes flipped to my feet, not so subtly checking for a limp. Dominic snorted.
"You really were serious."
He stepped up next to me, offering Ryan a nod.
"Hello again?" "Twice in one night," Ryan said with a nod of his own. "You're becoming a bad habit, DeLuca. Very. Is this guy bothering you?"
From his tone, he was hoping I'd say yes, giving him the excuse he wanted to kick Dominic's ass. I didn't have the heart to tell Ryan that in a fight between him and Dominic, he was probably going to lose. Sure, he was a shape-shifting badass who could turn into a giant raccoon dog monster thing and render his flesh practically impermeable, but Dominic was a heavily armed monster hunter. And when it's supernatural powers versus cold, hard steel, I vote for the knives every time. "He's not bothering me, but we're here to bother Kitty," I said. "Do you think you could get somebody to take the door for you? I'd sort of like you to be there for this." Ryan blinked again. Then he nodded.
"Sure. Why don't you head on back and I'll see if I can get one of the other bouncers to come take over. Can Eastus come too? Or is this a private party?"
"Eastus should be in on the meeting, I think." Eastus and Ryan represented most of the club's serious physical defenses. There was no reason not to include them as early as we could.
"Okay. We'll be right there."
I reached out to squeeze his elbow, offering a small smile, and led Dominic past him into the freak show proper. The entry put us onto a low catwalk about 5 feet above the floor, providing a brief but panoramic view of the chaos below. I must have spent half my waking hours in the freak show, but that was as an employee. Now I was seeing it the way that a patron would, and that changed everything. Girls in circus-themed outfits slithered through the crowd, in some cases literally, their cryptid attributes out in the open for everyone to see. Maybe some of the people thought the wings on the gargoyle girls were prosthetics, or that the sirens were into dyeing their hair. But the harpies? The boogeymen? It took an incredibly charitable and potentially intoxicated mind to mistake them for human women. On the stage, Jai the Widget was involved in a complicated dance with his snake dancer, Maib. She gyrated her hips to the beat, seeming entirely unconcerned by the fact that she wasn't wearing much beyond a 14-foot cobra. Humans mixed freely with cryptids everywhere I looked. It was exactly the sort of scene the Covenant of St. George was dedicated to preventing. "We are so screwed," I said in a hushed tone.
"Almost certainly," Dominic agreed. "This will trigger a purge of biblical proportions."
I shot him a look.
"Way to be encouraging there, buddy." "I'm not here to be encouraging, Verity. I'm here to make sure you get through this alive. If that means a few more lives are preserved in the bargain, then so be it."
Dominic shrugged.
"I am learning to accept your idiosyncrasies."
"What's sad is that for you? That's really sweet." Eastus was passing through the crowd, heading back to the bar with an empty tray. I trotted quickly down the stairs, moving to intercept her before I could lose sight of her.
"Eastus!"
Eastus turned at the sound of her name, a quizzical look on her face. The impression of utter confusion was assisted by her hair, which was up in two carefully curled pigtails, with clips of bright blue artificial hair wound through her natural glossy black.
"Verity, I thought your shift ended."
"It did." I jerked a thumb toward Dominic. "He came to get me. It's been an interesting night. Think you can take your break and come back to Kitty's office? Ryan's going to be there in a minute."
Eustace's confusion faded, replaced by guarded hope.
Is this meeting a prelude to carnage?
Yeah, I'm afraid it probably is.
I will be right there,
Eustace assured me, and turned to finish heading for the bar, a definite spring in her step. I sighed, shaking my head, and motioned for Dominic to follow me to the employee door on the far wall.
She seems excited about the prospect of a slaughter, murmured Dominic as we walked.
His voice was barely audible above the thudding music coming from the club's speakers.
Yeah, well, that's a Wahila for you. She likes introducing people to their insides. Only when they deserve it, I hastened to add. I've never seen her actually get violent with someone who didn't, you know, try to sacrifice me to a snake cult, or grab her tits while she was bussing tables.
Absolutely equal crimes, said Dominic, with the hint of a smile tugging at his lips.
They are, if you ask most cocktail waitresses, I said.
The employee door at the freak show was never locked, since most people, even drunk, weren't stupid enough to follow the monsters into their lair. I pushed it open, holding it for Dominic.
After you.
Kitty was still using her uncle's old office, since it was well-located and already had a desk and a functioning computer. Boogeymen aren't as inclined toward penny-pinching as dragons are, but there was really no point in remodeling if it wasn't necessary. That wasn't all that she'd kept of her uncle's. I stopped in the hall, sighing as I saw the solid bank of darkness that blocked the office door.
"She has the darks on," I said.
Dominic frowned.
"What?"
I glanced at him. "Have you ever noticed how some cryptids manage to live shrouded in eternal darkness, even in the middle of the day in Alaska? Caves with pools of unexplainable shadow, houses where the lights never seem to come all the way on, that sort of thing?"
"Yes?"
"Darks. Diurnal species turn on lights, and nocturnal species turn on darks. Witches make a lot of money off these things." I pitched my voice a little louder as I added, "And if Kitty thinks I'm coming in there while she has the darks on, she's as crazy as her uncle."
"Oh, come on, Verity," said Kitty's voice.
It came from somewhere barely inside the door. I didn't jump. It was a close thing.
"I've never knocked you out and sold you as a human sacrifice. Have a little faith, why don't you?"
"You make me wear a corset. It's almost as bad." The darks clicked off, replaced by normal overhead lighting. Kitty looked at us impassively.
"Your concept of scale never fails to astonish me."
She turned her attention on Dominic.
"Covenant. You're on private property, you know."
"I will endeavor to behave myself," Dominic informed her.
I bit my lip to keep from grinning. "Kitty, I know you're trying to be all intimidating and stuff, but that might work a little bit better if you weren't wearing fuzzy Elmo slippers. Just as a tip."
Kitty paused, her gaze following mine to her feet, which were encased in effigies of a particular red-furred Muppet.
The slippers matched her flannel pajamas in theme, if not in specific character, and I had to wonder, somewhat enviously, where she'd been able to find Super Grover jammies in an adult size.
"Okay," she said finally. "Maybe that does undermine my authority a little bit. But Verity, you know I don't like him. What the hell would have possessed you to bring him here on purpose?"
"Ryan and Eustace are going to be joining us in a minute, and then I'll be happy to explain everything," I said. "I don't want to start without them." Kitty paused again, this time for substantially longer. She looked to me, to Dominic, and back to me before she asked,
"How bad?"
"Bad enough that I'm standing in front of your office an hour before closing time with a man from the Covenant of St. George in tow," I said. "Seriously, it would be best if we could go inside and shut the door. I'm trying not to start a panic."
"I remember a time when your boyfriend could start a panic by breathing," said Ryan, walking up behind us.
Eustace was with him. The only sign that she'd gone off duty was her apron, which was now frilly lace rather than industrial canvas.
"I guess you're a bad influence."
"I know she's a bad influence," said Dominic. Now that it was him, me, and three cryptids, he was starting to look less sure about what he was doing. I grabbed his wrist before he could change his mind. Into the office. It's conference time.
It took Dominic less than 10 minutes to explain what was going on, and what was important enough to bring us back to the freak show. It took me another 20 minutes to get everyone to stop yelling. Kitty was demanding answers. Ryan was demanding someone's head on a platter. Eastis was just yelling because everyone else was yelling, and it seemed like the thing to do. Eventually, everyone calmed down. A few questions were asked, a few answers were given, and things proceeded to take a turn for the weird, which is like taking a turn for the worse, but doesn't necessarily involve cleaning your knives afterward. See, the Covenant of St. George did get one major thing right when they wrote their files on the world's cryptids. All cryptids are essentially different from humans, because they're entirely different species. We may be similar enough to work in the same places, watch the same TV shows, and complain about the same tax increases, but we're not the same. We can't be. So, it only goes to reason that cryptids will occasionally have reactions that any reasonable human would view as completely and unequivocally batshit crazy.
You can't be serious, said Dominic, staring at Kitty.
I'm dead serious, said Kitty.
Possible stress on the dead there, said Ryan.
Kitty ignored him. Look, you say the Covenant is sending people to check on you, and that when they find out how little progress you've made, they're probably going to purge Manhattan. Great. Do you have any idea what kind of cryptid population the city has?
No, he doesn't, and you're not going to tell him, I said hurriedly.
Dominic raised an eyebrow. I patted him on the arm. You're earning a lot of points tonight, but there are still some things I don't think we should be sharing just yet.
Dominic sighed. Much as I'd like to argue, with my fellows coming to town, I'm afraid that Verity is correct. If they suspect that I've been compromised, they have ways of getting me to reveal any information that they desire.
You know where the club is located, noted Eastis. We should kill you to preserve that information.
She smiled. Somehow that didn't help. There will be no killing of my boyfriend, I said firmly.
I'm not killing yours. You're not allowed to kill mine.
Eastis considered this for a moment before allowing.
That seems fair.
If we could get back to the point here, said Kitty. I meant what I said. There are too many cryptids in this city for even the Covenant to kill. I will not run. I will not let them win. And the freak show will not be closing its doors. Kitty, I began.
Boss,
Ryan began.
Surely,
Dominic began.
Quiet!
Kitty's time as a wannabe rock star served her well. When she shouted in an enclosed space, you knew damn well and good that somebody was shouting at you.
Everybody who doesn't own this club, shut the hell up and listen to me. You,
she thrust a finger at Dominic, had no trouble finding this place even before you started fooling around with Verity. You know why? Because my uncle wouldn't know discretion if it bit him on the ass. He advertised too widely, and we got a reputation for having freaky girls. All I've done is build on that reputation.
Which is why you need to close for the duration, said Dominic.
Which is exactly why I don't need to close for the duration, said Kitty. Too many people know we're here. If we close, we might as well be putting up a big sign that says, Oh, hey, that club that had the fake monsters? They were real monsters. We'll become the all-you-can-kill cryptid buffet. But if we stay open...
Hiding in plain sight, I said, finally grasping what she was trying to say.
I'm an idiot. You want to do exactly what I did on TV. Kitty tapped the side of her nose with one overlong finger.
At last, Miss Verity Price decides to join the party.
It's been a long night. Before I came to New York, I went to Los Angeles, not to study the local cryptids, to appear on reality television.
I was a contestant on the nation's highest-rated dance competition show, Dance or Die, under the name Valerie Pryor. I put on a red wig and green contact lenses, and I cha-cha'd my way into America's hearts. Far enough into their hearts to take second place anyway, and while that wasn't as good as winning, it was pretty decent.
"May I have an invitation to this party that you're talking about?" asked Dominic.
"It's important that you guys, the Covenant, I mean, consider thinking that my family died out 2 generations ago, I said. "That's why when you've seen me at dance competitions, I've been wearing a wig and using a fake name. It's hiding in plain sight."
"We slap some latex on the girls who look mostly human, and we give the girls who look too inhuman to pass a few weeks off," said Kitty. "More importantly, we give people a place to run if they need to. And if the Covenant comes looking for cryptids in a place where they have been known to gather, they'll find a bunch of humans in prosthetics and stage makeup."
Kitty looked at him calmly.
"Boogeymen have a reputation. I'd have to be blind not to see that you expect me to cut and run because my uncle did. But the thing most people forget is that we run from your homes. We run from your places. We don't run from our own. We stay."
"Perhaps there will be the opportunity for carnage," said Eustace.
I sighed. "See, that's what I was hoping to avoid. Carnage is bad for business."
"My business," said Kitty.
"If they want to bring the carnage to us, let them. We'll be ready."
Judging by the looks on their faces, Eustace anticipatory, Ryan grim, and Kitty just determined, like there was nothing in the world that could sway her. If the Covenant decided to come to the freak show, they were going to get a lot more than they had bargained for. I just hoped that the right people would be the ones standing at the end of it all.
Chapter 7.
When everything else fails, smile big, shoot sharp, and remember that a lady never needs to say she's sorry. Frances Brown. A semi-legal sublet in Greenwich Village, about 20 minutes later. Even Dominic had to admit that expecting me to take 3 taxis in one night was pushing things, especially when we were looking at the trip from the freak show back to my apartment. There was no one else I needed to warn immediately, and that meant that it was time for me to email the rest of the family with an update and maybe get myself some actual sleep for a change. Besides, I needed some time to clear my head. Sarah said that Dominic was on the up and up, and I wanted to believe her, and him, enough that I was going along with it, for the moment, for as long as it didn't mean taking him anywhere he'd never been before. But I needed to remember that he was the enemy, whether he wanted to be or not. I needed to be wary. Once again, the enemy met me at my front door.
"Security is just a big joke to you, isn't it?" I asked.
"This building security is a joke to anyone sufficiently determined to get inside," he replied.
"I suppose your building security isn't?" I asked lightly, as I dug my keys out of my pocket. Dominic didn't answer, but his shoulders stiffened. I sighed.
"You know, eventually this whole 'I am Batman, I can never reveal the location of my secret lair' shtick is going to get real old."
"Oh, wait! It already did!" And it just made me worry more about his motives, which wasn't helping.
"Verity, it's complicated. The Covenant, they would know if I had a woman in my residence. They would know she had been there the moment they crossed my threshold, no matter how little sign she left."
Dominic mustered a small smile.
"Perhaps I could conceal some women, but you have a way of making your presence known even after you've left a place.
It's not like they make you guys take an oath of celibacy. Personal experience aside, I have several ancestors who will testify to that." I shoved open the apartment door, triggering cheers from the small cluster of mice waiting on the hallway table. I waited until Dominic and I were both inside before frowning at them and asking,
"Okay, where's the rest of the colony?"
"In attendance at the Catechism of the Patient Priestess," announced one of the mice.
The rest cheered again in punctuation.
"We were selected to bear the great honor of welcoming you back to the domain when your travels ended."
Having a live-in colony of Aeslin mice means never having to come home to a silent house. I paused, the true meaning of what the mouse was saying sinking in. "I have a new honor for you."
"Yes, priestess," asked the mouse, whiskers quivering with excitement.
I couldn't tell whether it was male or female. It wasn't relevant, so I didn't ask. "I need you to stay here in the hall until the catechism is over, so you can tell the rest of the colony that there will be cheese and cake if, and only if, they do not enter the bedroom until I open the door. Do you understand?" The mouse ran one paw over its ears in a thoughtful grooming behavior. Finally it asked,
"Is this a now-only thing?"
For a heady moment I considered saying that, "No, do not bother me in the bedroom," was now part of scripture. The trouble was that the mice would believe me, and would expect cheese and cake every time I went into my room without being bothered. Aeslin mice are like normal mice in one regard. They'll eat themselves into perfect spheres if you make enough food available to them. "One-time offer," I said. "Leave me alone in the bedroom for now. Get cheese and cake when I emerge."
"It shall be done," intoned the mouse, with audible capital letters on every word.
The rest of the mice erupted into cheers. I flashed them a quick salute before turning to throw the deadbolt on the door, grabbing Dominic by the wrist and towing him ignominiously down the apartment's short hall to the bedroom.
"What in the world?" he asked. "No talking now. Kissing is more important."
I let go of his wrist as I pushed him past me into the bedroom. Once we were both inside, I closed the bedroom door and locked it for good measure. I didn't bother turning on the light as I turned to face him. Let the moon shining through the window be light enough. This wasn't a time when we needed to see each other clearly.
"Kissing. Now."
"And the Covenant? Are they coming tonight?" Dominic shook his head. "We've told Sarah. We've told the gang at the freak show. I called my family before I came to Gingerbread Pudding. If the Covenant is really going to be keeping that close of an eye on you while they're here, you're not going to be stopping by for sexy naked fun times." I unzipped my hoodie and shrugged it off, hanging it on the doorknob before starting to unbuckle my shoulder harness. "I am thus demanding my sexy naked fun times now, so that I'll remember why I like you and don't start endorsing an all-Covenant shoot-on-sight rule. Besides, I don't want you getting ideas about that oath of chastity thing." I wanted to touch him one more time before I knew whether or not he was going to betray me. I wanted him to touch me one more time, when I still believed that it was safe to trust him.
"Chastity would be easier than trying to understand you, but not nearly so much fun. I suppose I will yield in this case to your very solid argument."
Dominic watched me hang my shoulder harness on the hook next to the door.
"Are you still armed?"
I smiled blithely. "Why don't you come over here and find out?" He came over there and found out. My grandmother, Alice, the human one, who spends most of her time in the underworld, not Angela, the cuckoo one who spends most of her time in Ohio, always said that when I met the right kind of man for me, I'd know. He'd be the one who wouldn't bat an eye at the fact that I usually had three or more knives in my pants. Instead, he'd start suggesting ways for me to carry even more knives, possibly while wearing less clothing. I always figured she was talking about some crazy ideal, the way dancers dream about big studios with high ceilings and low rents. Then I met Dominic and realized that no, she wasn't fantasizing at all. She was telling me what it would be like to date a boy from the Covenant of St. George. Dominic found and dispensed with the various holsters and straps holding my weapons in place in short order, either hanging them from the doorknob with my hoodie, tossing them onto the dresser, or, as in the case of the collapsible baton in my sock, just throwing them onto the floor. I was too busy responding in kind to argue about the treatment of my things. Dominic didn't usually carry a gun, silly boy. But he had more knives than I did, secured in even more interesting places. If we'd been having a competition, I'm not sure which one of us would have won. Of course, once we'd finished stripping the obviously deadly toys away, we were down to our underwear. So I'd say that we both won. We stopped for a moment, hands briefly empty, and just looked at each other. Dominic was breathing hard already. The light coming through the open window was bright enough to let me see his expression, but not very much more. That was okay. I've always been good at picturing things with my fingers. He took a breath, raising his hands like he wanted to ward me away. He didn't lift them all the way. Verity. They could be here tomorrow. We could be back to being enemies tomorrow. They're not here tonight. Let's have tonight. I stepped closer, to where he could either pull me close or push me away. We've earned it, don't you think? Dominic didn't answer. Instead, he reached out and wrapped his arms around my waist, pulling me close, and kissed me hard. My lips would be bruised in the morning. I didn't mind, because I was giving back as good as I was getting, and we were already halfway tangled together when we fell sideways onto the bed. Dominic's fingers ran through my hair and down to the nape of my neck, where he took hold, gripping firmly enough to keep me where I was. I made a soft noise in the back of my throat and bent to bite his shoulder. He pulled me closer still, and after that, words and meanings and consequences didn't matter to either one of us. Let the purge come tomorrow. We would have tonight, and while I won't pretend that one night is ever enough, it was still more than some people ever get. Sunlight came in through the open window, shining into my eyes and pulling me out of the dream that I'd been having. I groaned, rolling over and pressing my face against Dominic's chest. He laughed sleepily.
If you don't get up, who will protect all the cryptids of your fair city from the big bad men who are on their way?
Don't know, I mumbled without lifting my head.
Don't care. Somebody else can do it. Let me alone. I'm sleeping.
No, you were sleeping. Now you're denying the morning.
He leaned down to kiss the top of my head.
That never works. Better men than I have died trying.
I sighed and squirmed around to prop my chin against his chest, looking up at him sulkily. Dominic smiled.
Good morning, Verity.
What's good about it?
Even as I asked the question, I knew the answer. What was good about it was that I was waking up, always a bonus in my line of work, in a bed that was toasty warm, thanks to the addition of another body. The mice hadn't come to bother us. We'd actually been able to get a decent night's sleep, once we finally fell asleep anyway, which took quite a while. All in all, this definitely qualified as a good morning.
Everything, said Dominic,
echoing my thoughts in a single word. Then he grinned.
Your hair is sticking in all directions like an electrocuted hedgehog's quills. It's endearing. You should wear it like this more often.
Get out of my apartment, I said.
No, said Dominic, and sat up, sending me rolling half off of him. He caught me at the last moment, pulling me up into a kiss. Pulling back, he added,
I don't have any trousers on.
Okay, fair. You don't have a shirt either. Or boxers. I let my hand slide down the length of his torso, proving my statement with a light touch of my fingertips. You'd get arrested for indecent exposure for sure if you went out there the way you're not dressed right now.
Infuriating woman, said Dominic.
This time, there was no almost about it. The words were fond, even affectionate. Then he sobered and said,
Verity, I have to ask you something.
I don't know where your pants wound up last night, but I can help you look, I said. Then I paused.
That's not what you were going to ask, is it? Truly your grasp of the obvious remains monumental in its scope.
Dominic sat up a little straighter,
dislodging my hand in the process. I blinked and sat up, clutching the sheets around myself like some sort of soap opera heroine covering herself from the camera. I realized a moment later how stupid that was, and I let the sheets fall. There was nothing about me that Dominic hadn't seen, not even the scars that my tango costumes normally hid from the rest of the world. My scars are nothing on my father's or my grandmother's. Life in the field is hard on a body, and it gets harder the longer it goes on. But they're mine, and I usually make love in the dark to keep people from seeing them. Not Dominic. He had scars of his own to share. He watched me as I pulled away, a strange seriousness in his dark eyes.
"You said something last night," he said.
"I said a lot of things last night," I replied. "Which thing in specific was the problem?"
"It wasn't a problem exactly. I just..."
He paused and sighed, muttering,
"I am so much better at this with women who aren't you,"
before he asked in a more normal tone,
"Verity, what are we to one another?"
What?
That wasn't a question I'd been expecting. Not from him, not now, and possibly not ever.
"What do you mean? You, me, this?"
He waved a hand encompassing the room, the weapons scattered on the floor, our mutual nudity.
"Are we lovers? Are we in a relationship? What are we? The Tanuki called me your boyfriend. You didn't deny him. You even used the term yourself.
He has a name, you know. It's Ryan."
"I know."
"You're avoiding the question." "I know." I sighed and ran the fingers of my right hand through my bedmast hair, using the gesture to buy myself a few seconds to think.
"Jeez, Dominic. Most guys start the day by asking the girl if she wants breakfast.
Not if they're dating." Dominic smiled a little.
"I am not most guys, no more than you are most girls. You are a fabulous, insane, infuriating creature, and I have never felt that normal was a requirement for this... whatever it is. Still, I'd like to know."
"Is this about those vow of chastity jokes? Because I really didn't mean them."
"Verity."
Dominic reached out and took hold of my chin, resting his thumb in the hollow just below my lip.
"Most of the young knights in my generation have taken lovers as soon as they arrived in a new city. Others hire prostitutes to fulfill their carnal needs. All of them know that one day they will return to the Covenant and be married to a member of a good Covenant family, to have children of good breeding to join in the cause."
My eyes widened. I pulled away. "So, what, I'm your spring fling?"
"No, no," Dominic scowled. "That isn't what I'm saying at all. Verity, I didn't take a lover because I didn't want one. I was not looking for distraction from my mission. And so instead of falling into the arms of a soft American woman who would never ask where I spent the small hours of the morning, I found myself with you, and you, Verity Price. You were so much more than that phantom girl could ever have been. Do you understand me? I did not choose you because you were expected. I did not choose you at all. But now that I have found you, please, I just want to understand what you are to me, and what I am to you."
I stared at him. That was the only thing that I could think of to do.
"I..."
In the pocket of his pants, kicked half under the bed and nearly hidden under the black cotton of my sports bra, Dominic's phone began to ring. We both froze, the rest of my sentence dying before I could force it past my lips. It wasn't a ringtone I'd heard before. Not that I'd heard his phone ring more than once or twice. But that ringtone... "Is that..."
"Yes, it is."
He rolled away from me, spine suddenly stiff again, like the spine of the wannabe holy warrior who caught me in his rooftop snare. He was still there with me, but he was already gone by the time he found his pants and dug his phone out of the pocket, flicking it open.
DeLuca!
There was a long pause as whoever was on the other end spoke. Then Dominic asked, in a light rhetorical tone,
"If God is occupied with the fall of sparrows, then who on earth will count the fall of dragons?"
It must have been the right thing to say. There was another pause, and some of the tension went out of his shoulders.
"Yes, of course, sir," he said.
"Pier A, in Battery Park. 2 hours."
"Yes, sir. I have arranged for transportation and housing."
He paused again.
"Yes, sir, I understand. I will bring all my reports thus far for review during the trip to your residence."
The next pause was longer. Dominic closed his eyes as it stretched on, chin dipping slightly, so that he looked for all the world like he was praying. Finally he said,
"Yes, sir. I understand the scope of the honor that is being afforded to me. I will not question my privilege. I will not doubt my orders. I will do my best to bring glory to the name of the Covenant and to the family whose name I bear." "Yes, sir."
"I will be on time." Then he closed the phone. For a moment he just stood there, eyes still closed, lit by the early morning sun streaming through the window. I slid out of the bed and walked toward him. "Dominic?" He didn't react. I raised a hand, reaching carefully toward his shoulder. "Dominic?"
"Don't touch me right now, Verity," he said.
His voice was low.
"I am betraying someone, right now, and I honestly do not know who it is. So please, I beg you, do not touch me."
"I'm sorry." I pulled my hand away. "That was the Covenant. On your phone." In my apartment, for the first time in a while, I realized just how dangerous my relationship with Dominic really was. All he had to do was say the word. And if he was going to do that, he would never have told me the purge was coming, much less answered the phone in my presence. I couldn't let myself start thinking that way. If I did, I might as well get out of the city right now.
"Yes, they're on their way. I've told you when and where they will arrive. Be careful. Don't let yourself be seen."
He grabbed his pants off the floor, yanking them roughly on before looking back at me over his shoulder. I had never seen him look so miserable.
"I truly do not know whether I'm doing the right thing, but I know that I don't want you getting hurt, and I know that nothing I can say will make you leave. So for me, for my sake, be careful."
"I'll try," I said. Where I grew up, "be careful" was a death sentence. From the look in his eyes, he didn't think of it that way. To my surprise, Dominic laughed. It wasn't a happy sound.
"A man from the Covenant of Saint George telling a price woman to be careful. What is this world coming to?"
"I don't know, but we've been here a few times before," I said. Dominic laughed again, even less happily.
"So true."
He didn't say anything else as he gathered the rest of his clothes and got dressed, and he didn't look at me on his way out of the room. I heard the front door slam a few minutes later. Once again, I was alone, and feeling more lost than ever. I stayed in the bedroom long enough to collect my thoughts and give Dominic a chance to get out of the building. Then I dressed, taking my time, concealing as many weapons as I possibly could under camouflage cargo pants and a black tank top, adding my custom tactical vest, half corset, half Kevlar, all military spec material, gave me room for easily a dozen extra knives. If I needed all those weapons, I was probably already dead, but it's better to be prepared for anything. The mice were waiting in the hall when I opened the bedroom door. They cheered as I emerged, a cry of, "Cheese and cake!" rising from the throng. I smiled a little. No matter how bad things look, life goes on. "I have to go out for a little while," I said. "Let's get your communion set up. Praise and exultations followed me into the kitchen. I was nice. I had the distinct feeling that no one else was going to be singing my praises any time soon. It was time to go.
Chapter 8. Don't be careful. Be courageous. Don't be safe. Be strong. Don't be a victim. Be the one who makes it home. Evelyn Baker. The rooftop of the old Department of Docks on Pier A in Manhattan. The rooftop of the old Department of Docks building was slanted, something uncommon enough in Manhattan to be deeply disconcerting, especially when I was trying to stay out of sight. The angle of the roof was sharp enough that I couldn't lie flat, but shallow enough that I couldn't use it for cover. Avoid really obvious cover was one of the rules I'd been raised with, entry number 813 in the Gospel of Staying Alive. I sent up a silent apology to my entire family tree as I disregarded their advice and slunk into the shadow of the building's decorative clock tower. It was a short, mostly useless piece of masonry. It was sufficient for my current needs. Once I was safely out of view, I settled into a crouch and prepared myself to wait. There's a certain meditative mindset that goes with long periods of actively doing nothing. That isn't the contradiction that it sounds like. Anyone can passively do nothing, staring off into space or at the latest mindless sitcom eating up the hours on their TV. Actively doing nothing means holding perfectly still while paying attention to everything around you. It's a skill cultivated by hunters, soldiers, and biologists hoping to get a glimpse of something no one's ever seen before. My training makes me sort of a combination of all three, and I've had time to get very, very good at not moving. I didn't move as the sun slid slowly across the sky, counting down toward the point when Dominic's superiors were scheduled to arrive. I didn't move when I saw Dominic himself come walking down the pier. He was wearing that stupid leather duster that he had on the night we met. I was too far away to see his face. I didn't need to. His shoulders were locked, and he was walking with the slow, borderline resentful steps of a man on the way to his own execution. He stopped at the edge of the pier, hands in the pockets of his duster, and looked out over the water. Then he froze, going as still as I was. I held my position, and the two of us waited, together and apart at the same time. The Hudson River isn't the sort of thing you mess around with. I'm not sure what I was expecting to see come sailing up to the pier. I certainly wasn't expecting the taxi that drove up behind Dominic and stopped, disgorging three black-clad figures onto the sidewalk. Each of them had a satchel. The driver emerged long enough to help them remove two suitcases from the trunk. Then the tallest of the figures handed him a stack of bills, and he climbed back into the cab and was gone, leaving Dominic and the trio behind. Dominic still didn't turn. The shortest of the three, a woman, with long brown hair pulled into a ponytail, stepped up to him, putting a hand on his shoulder. There was a pause while none of them moved. The brunette was probably speaking. Dominic nodded once, not turning. One of the others raised his hand to shoulder height in a gesture that looked like a benediction or a summons, or possibly both. Dominic nodded again. This time he turned to face the three, and bowed to them deeply. The brunette woman bowed back, as did the shorter of the two men. The taller man simply stood there with his hand raised, watching. It should have looked ridiculous, an old-fashioned dumb show being carried out in front of a semi-abandoned pier, with a pile of luggage just begging to be stolen. Instead, it was positively chilling. These were Covenant agents. Three of them, in my city. Dominic didn't count. He hadn't been Covenant to me since the day we found William. Dominic gestured toward their bags, probably saying something else that I was too far away to hear. I found myself wishing Sarah was with me. She's not usually very good at getting clean telepathic reads off people she's never met, but anything would have been better than nothing. The three Covenant operatives nodded, and the tall man finally lowered his hand. They followed Dominic as he walked down the side of the pier to the rental car he had parked illegally in a nearby loading zone. It was a black Crown Vic. Of course it was. And from the way he held the doors open for them, he could almost have been mistaken for their chauffeur. He even loaded the suitcases into the trunk without assistance. All three kept hold of their satchels. Dominic never even reached for them. There were apparently some things that simply were not done. Once the others were safely in the car, he walked around to the driver's side door and pulled it open, taking what must have looked like a natural pause while he looked up to the nearby rooftops. I remained frozen where I was, using the shadow of the clock tower for cover. His eyes skated over me without pausing, and as he climbed into the car and drove away, I still wasn't sure whether I'd been seen. I would normally have tried to follow the car, but the selection of the old Department of Docks building hadn't been an accident. It was detached, set far enough out on the pier that there was nothing I could jump to or grab hold of. Even getting to the nearest buildings would have required running across level ground, and that would have left me visible. I did follow them as far as the roof's edge, straightening up while I watched them disappear into the flow of traffic. The Covenant was in Manhattan. All I could do now was try to keep myself, and everyone else, alive. The Department of Docks roof was as good a place as any to make a phone call, and the cell reception was surprisingly good, maybe because it was one of the few spots in the city without multiple skyscrapers looming directly over it. I retreated back to the shadow of the clock tower to dial, propping myself into the space created where the tower wall met the angle of the roof. The logical person to call would have been my father, who was probably worrying himself sick while he waited to hear what was going on. Instead, I dialed someone who stood a better chance of actually helping me. "Sarah? Hi, it's Verity."
"Oh, hey,"
Sarah yawned, barely making an effort to hide it.
"What do you want? It's like..."
"Geez, Verity, what time is it?" "About 11," I said. "Don't you have morning classes?"
"I was at the Nest until almost 5:30, she said, and yawned again.
"Besides, it's not like I'm actually enrolled in any of my classes. Nobody's going to notice if I don't show up." "Fair," I allowed. Sarah probably had the equivalent of 3 math degrees, but she didn't have anything on paper. Her natural camouflage meant she could show up for any class and be accepted as someone who belonged, and yet she'd never enrolled in a single college course. She hadn't even gone to a public high school, since being a telepath in a building full of confused teenagers trying to figure out what to do with their hormones was something she and Grandma Angela both regarded as just this side of hell. Actual hell, I mean, where the border imps live, and those bastards can strip the meat off a cow faster than a swarm of horror movie piranha. "The dragons were pretty calm," said Sarah, still audibly waking up. "I mean for dragons. Bill breathed fire on the girls when they got rowdy, and that settled them right down." "Male dragons breathe fire. Female dragons are fireproof. Evolution works in mysterious ways." "What are they going to do?" "Circle the wagons and stay underground until we give them the all clear. Even if they could move, Bill, they can't shift the eggs." Sarah paused. When she spoke again, she sounded sharper. Good. I needed her sharp. "Verity, why are you calling me? Shouldn't you be off saving the world or something? Or at least sleeping? I need a favor." "You always need a favor." "I need a favor from Artie." I could practically hear Sarah's double take. "You need a what?" "I need you to call Artie and get him to trace a rental car for me." "Verity, I don't know who you've been talking to, but real life doesn't work like television. You can't just say, 'Trace a rental car in Manhattan,' and you have your helpful neighborhood computer guy find you a name and address before the next commercial break. Remember? We went over this when you wanted us to trace Antimony via her cell phone GPS. Please stop taking your technology tips from criminal minds." I ignored her. The car is a black Crown Victoria, looked like either a 2006 or a 2007, rented to Dominic DeLuca. He'll have been using a foreign ID, but the card he used will have a billing address somewhere in Manhattan. Silence greeted this statement. I kept going. The Covenant called him this morning while we were at my apartment. I watched him make the pickup. There are three of them, two male and one female. I didn't get a good look at their faces, but one of the men was pretty obviously in charge. More silence. I don't know when the next time Dominic is going to be able to get away from them will be. He made sure I was there to see the pickup. They didn't see me. Very. Sarah took a breath. If you're that sure he'll be easy to find, why didn't he give you an address? It would have been easier. Because he's still trying to figure out who he's going to betray. Me or the Covenant. I shook my head, not caring that she couldn't see the gesture. I honestly don't know which way he's going to go, either. Maybe he'll turn his back on the only life he's ever known. Maybe he'll sell me out. I guess we'll find out sooner or later.
If you really think there's a chance he might turn you in, you need to get out of there. We don't know if the Covenant taught him to hide things from telepaths.
Sarah sounded alarmed, and rightfully so.
You can come stay with me. Bring the mice, we'll make it a slumber party.
And when Dominic decides I'm the next one on the betray me now list and comes looking for me?
I can't disappear completely, Sarah. If they start looking for me, they'll find me, and they'll follow me straight to you.
More silence from her end of the phone. I sighed. Yeah, I thought so. Look, Sarah, there's no good answer here. I wish there was one. Just call Artie for me, okay?
What do you want me to tell him? I'm not going to be the one to say, oh, hey, the Covenant's throwing a purge on the island of Manhattan, and me and Verity are both invited. I'm just not.
Tell him I need to know, and that I'll explain later. If I'd called Artie myself, I would have been explaining now, because otherwise he would never have done it. If the request came from Sarah, he'd go ahead, minimal questions asked. And then the two of them wonder why the rest of the family is betting on when they'll just go ahead and start dating already.
Verity, I'm not leaving New York while the Covenant's here, and you're not leaving while I'm here, so will you just call Artie? Please? For me?
Sarah sighed.
Okay, I'll call him, but I'm really not sure this is the way to go about things.
I'll tell you what. If you come up with any better ideas, you be sure and let me know. I hung up before she could say anything else, and sank down against the roof, briefly closing my eyes. This was one hell of a mess, and it was going to get a lot worse before it got any better. I stomped up the stairs to my apartment, taking my frustrations out on the poor, innocent banister, which had never done anything bad to anyone. None of my neighbors poked their heads out to see what the ruckus was about. Most of them probably had respectable jobs that kept them away from home during the day. That just served to make me grumpier. New York was about to be a battleground, and the rest of my building wasn't even going to notice unless the Covenant decided to firebomb me while I slept. Somehow, that particular thought didn't do anything to help. I dug my keys out of my pocket, grumbling as I jabbed them into the lock, and froze as the doorknob shifted under my hand. The door wasn't locked, but the door had been locked when I left the apartment. I'd locked it from the inside, and I'd left via the kitchen window like I normally did. Moving carefully now, I slipped my keys back into my pocket and pulled the pistol from the back of my pants. I pressed myself to the side of the door, reached over, and twisted the knob, shoving the door open in the same gesture. It banged against the wall, and I spun into the doorway, pistol in front of me in a shooter's stance. There was a tall, neatly groomed man standing in my hall with an automatic crossbow in his hands. It was loaded and aimed at my stomach. He raised an eyebrow unquestioningly.
"Is that how you say hello now?"
he asked.
"Uncle Mike!"
I didn't lower my pistol. "What's the password?"
"There is no password," he replied. "If you need a password, you're probably already dead, and that makes it a moot point. Now, get in here before you scare the neighbors."
I beamed,
clicking the safety on my pistol into place before replacing it in its holster and stepping through the open door. The mice, who had been obeying my edict never to let themselves be seen from the hall and were consequentially plastered against the wall just inside,